Good evening. I'd like to call the October 5th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in, what, am I not on the mic? Please join me, rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members, please.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne? Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
He's here. He's just not here.
Mr. Burbank has asked to be excused. Ms. Chalk? I'm here. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Stein?
Here. Just here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne is here. We have 14 members. Ms. Robertson, sorry.
Thanks.
I'm here.
We have 14 members present.
Thank you. Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
And I would like to ask for an executive session after our public meeting tonight for to discuss real estate negotiations and personnel matters. And that is that. So we are at public privilege of the floor. We have a few people signed up. You can limit your remarks to 3 minutes. And if anybody is moved to speak without having signed up, you'll have a chance after the first four people. Mary Behrens, and please just tell us where you live.
Yes, I live at 105 Devon Road in the town of Ithaca, and I'm here this afternoon to respectfully request that the members of the legislature reinstate funding in next year's budget for the CPS mentoring program and for the Samaritan Center. These two programs, as I think you all know, assist the poorest and most vulnerable children, adults, and families in Tompkins County. If a small fraction of our county tax dollars cannot be made available to help fulfill our collective social responsibility for our neighbors, then I think we're doing something wrong. And I'm certainly here willing to help change that and make that right. Funding for these two programs is one of the best investments that the county can make, because the dollars allocated for these programs in years past, approximately $27,000, will continue to be matched by New York State with $48,000. And then if we look at the leveraging on the much more micro perspective, the annual investment in the Child Protective Services Mentoring Program results in dozens of families and hundreds of children receiving the personalized professional counseling and mentoring that leads to permanency and well-being for these families. There are hundreds of at-risk youth in our county, and this program, in collaboration with community providers, builds the partnerships required to make family stability a possibility and, in fact, a reality in the lives for many of these youth at risk. I started volunteering for Catholic Charities 8 years ago, and over the years, I have met many women and children and the men who have come to the Samaritan Center and participated in the CPS mentoring program as well as the services of the Samaritan Center. They are residents of Tompkins County. Most of them do have some work income, and they pay taxes. They are very grateful for the existence of these programs, and they're particularly grateful for the personal attention and dignified manner in which they receive assistance. They tell me that the services at the Samaritan Center and through CPS mentoring are services that they cannot find anywhere else. In closing, I do want to thank all of you serving on the legislature, as well as all of the county employees, for all the hard work you do to make our county a great place to live. Fulfilling our social responsibility to assist those who are most needy is an essential ingredient of a great community. And if the county needs to raise taxes in order to meet this social responsibility, I am in full support of doing that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mary. Krista Bissell, and then James Stoyle after her.
Hi, I'm Krista Bissell from 137 Pine Tree Road in Ithaca. I think one of the last meetings that a number of Pine Tree Road residents attended, we gave you a petition. There are a few changes. I've given packets to each one of you. They are blue and purple packets. They have the full petition, all the signatures, and the few changes. One change is that there are 50 houses, not 49. And the total number of signatures on that petition are now 59, which represent 39 out of the 50 households on Pine Tree Road. The other things that you'll find in that folder, you will find documents from the county and from the grant proposal, which state that the overpass is an obstacle to the movement of goods and is therefore it should be taken down. And you'll see that mentioned in at least, I think I have three documents there where you can see the wording. We'd like to say that we think that the timing of this is very coincidental with the new proposal that's coming up right now in terms of the ERL project that Cornell has. And the last page you're going to see in that folder shows how much soil they are going to be moving from this project. And there's a resident of Forest Home who did the math for us, indicating how many truck trips that means. So it was 25,000 truck trips in the 2 years of intense construction that will be going on for that project to remove 225,000 cubic yards of dirt. So once again, we would like to say that we hope that the legislators will help us to maintain the livability of Pine Tree Road and not turn our community into a truck route. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Krista. James Stoyle and then Daniel Stoyle.
Hi. Hi. I'm James Stoyle. I live on 366 Conlon Road in Lansing. I'm here to speak about the Lansing Youth Services. I had a great experience in Lansing Youth Services in my years of middle school. I'm a freshman now. I went to programs like Primitive Pursuits and Dungeons and Dragons and Movie Makers. And I did a lot of hands-on stuff that I wouldn't have been able to do elsewhere. I had the opportunity to make a lot of great friends, especially in other grades, that I wouldn't have been able to meet otherwise. And I'm just here to say that I don't think that the Lansing Youth Services should get cut funding, because I think it's a great experience for kids who aren't interested in sports or want to add something else to sports. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Daniel Stoyle.
Hi, I'm Daniel Stoyle. I'm his brother. I live the same place he does, 366 Conlon Road, Lansing. I also attended Lansing Youth Services programs, and I made a lot of new friends. It's really enriched my middle school career, and it was a big part of the after-school activities I participated in. I did a lot of hands-on things, like in Primitive Pursuits. I got to build a fire without matches for the first time. I met a lot of new people, and I made a lot. I'm kind of repeating myself here.
Take your time. It's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you think of anything else you'd like to say, you can always send us a letter or an email to Kathy Covert, and she'll get it to everybody. Is there anyone else who'd like to address the public? All right, thank you. We have yes? Just let us know your name and where you live.
Hi. My name's Dan Furlich. I live on Boswick Road, town of Enfield. I just wanted to speak toward the worth of the monetary support of youth programs in the county. I'm a teacher, so I have the privilege of spending my days with young people throughout the year. I managed to find ways to do that during the summer as well. And having never been a lawmaker, decision maker, I can't imagine, you know, the difficulty of having a slew of programs all of worth and having to make that arrangement of triage that you're faced with. So I don't have insight into that, but I do have insight into youth. And over the last years especially, it's become really clear that if I get it right at all from their vantage point, their future is not rosy. Probably the first generation that will live less long than the current generation. The economy is shaky at best. They're being told that the most basic energy source that the entire society and culture is built around is running out, that peak oil is real. There's global conflicts everywhere. And the environment is unhealthy, with climate change being sort of the kingpin of that. And from my experience, the kids are very, very rarely invited into discussions about these things that are their future, let alone being invited into some active role in addressing them. And I think that the support that has gone into young people, like the person that just spoke, may well be the kind of expenditure that won't show up on a ledger easily, obviously, and is therefore sort of hard to put quantitative terms on, but in the long term may be the wisest expenditure that any community can make. The kids that I work with who are supported through county funds, the Youth Employment Service, et cetera, this summer, they learned a lot. They learned a work ethic. They learned to be purposeful. They learned skills. They learned what the sort of behind the scenes adult world is about that supports their own community. They bridged neighborhoods. But most of all, I think it's not what they did, it's what they felt. I think a lot of times in our community, we see youth as being some sort of a loved liability, where we need to take care of them. We need to keep them out of trouble, and we need to spend money to keep them healthy, as opposed to a vital resource that helps us create our future. And that's what they were doing. And while they were doing it, I think they were feeling this thing about being a productive part of the community, not a part that needs to be taken care of. And that's really pivotal. And I feel like spending money on these kids to get them into that role of doing and feeling productive is a smart expenditure of funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to speak? Going up to the mic.
Hello, my name is Maddie Friga, and I was a recent employee on the Youth Farm Project, which is one of the projects I was working on with Dan. And I'd like to say a few words about the importance of the youth employment and opportunity in our community. My experience this summer on the farm was definitely an unforgettable experience, an opportunity which brought together a diverse group of youth from across the community working on a really important project that wasn't just a work experience. We were working for the community, and for many of us, this was our first work experience, and it did wonders in terms of preparing us for the greater working world. Now, as a recent high school graduate, I feel comfortable starting other jobs thanks to my experience on this youth farm. I really can't emphasize enough how crucial this experience was to my development, and I can only hope that this type of experience is continued to be offered for other youth in our community. And many youth are never shown how worthwhile their work can be for our community and how worthwhile their contributions really are. And through these youth programs, we can and will show you just how important the work that we're doing is. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thank you all very much for coming. Municipal official, I see Don Barber there from the supervisor of the town of Caroline and chair of the Tompkins County Council of Government.
Thank you for that warm welcome, Martha. It's good to be here again with all of you, and I happen to have to make some of the same decisions you do, and I know how difficult it is. I wanted to speak with you briefly because before this meeting, I was meeting with several other municipal officials about the youth programming, and we were talking about how the programs are, the funding is blended together. It doesn't just come from one source, it comes from many sources, and as well as the resources are blended together. As we were talking about what we were facing, we're looking at your tentative budget really cutting severely into the youth programming, and we were discussing whether we could pick that up as other municipalities. And some of the larger municipalities said that they would most likely go it alone and not be part of this consortium of support. And some of the smaller communities, like my own town, I've talked with the youth programming people who say that if we were to pick up the full county share, that there would not be enough to run our program because of the blending of resources from other areas. So that we're looking at if we can't provide the funding, this thing is going to start to unravel. And we're not too confident that once you've unraveled it, we can put it back together again. So I want to just state for the town of Caroline that our youth program is dealing with at-risk youth from middle school to high school, and the only thing they work on is community service projects. And I can't think of a better thing for our Caroline youth to be working on, especially the at-risk youth, than working on community service. It's a great idea to be taught and value. So together, that means the municipalities and the county legislature and county youth bureau needed to develop a plan to transition from wherever we are right now to wherever we're going to be in the future. And we don't know where we're going to be in the future, but we need to determine that. And so I'm asking that we make this a priority as you think about the budget. There was some discussion of municipalities picking up some of the slack, but I can tell you that from my perspective, and I think from many of the others, that unless we have the commitment to work on a long-range plan to level this thing off, that that would be a tenuous proposal. So we need to make the commitment to work together. I know that I've been in front of this group before, about every 4 to 5 years, and I make the same pitch. I'll do it one more time because I still feel passionate about it. And it is that we have a common enemy, happens to be the New York State Legislature, and it is using our property taxpayers to pay for their programs. And the sleight of hand that they use to call for a property tax cap, putting the pressure on all of us for their problems, is obscene. It needs to come to an end. But the only way that comes to an end is by all of us, which means all of you and the Association of Towns and my government, educating the public that there are unintended consequences of a property tax cap, that until the state is going to keep the school funding at a constant formula and not adjust it every time, that they're going to stop, they're going to rescind all of the property tax funding that they use from our account. County for the for their programs. Until that happens, we don't want to talk about a property tax cap. But when it does, we're more than willing to, because then we actually can control our own destiny. Right now, our destiny, youth programs, are really a byproduct of what's going on in Albany. They have nothing to do with our priorities within our county. I think many of the people who have already spoken to you, not only today but in previous meetings, have told you how important youth programming is, but there are Catholic Charities, there are many other programs that are being put on the chopping block this year. It's not because of your priorities. It has to do with the state's priorities. So we need to get that straight. And you may remember pushback. It's time to bring that up again and push it really hard. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Don't go away. Don't leave the mic. Does anybody have questions for Don? I really want to thank you for that statement. But does anybody have questions for Don? Peter.
Don, I'm having a hard time understanding the whole business about how all the funds interrelate with the youth programs, but I'm not asking that now. I'm wondering, is this not an appropriate issue for the Council of Governments to bring up? I mean, you talk about working out some long-range plan, and the Council of Governments is the place where all the players sit together. It sounds to me like it's a natural.
Well, I'm glad it is a natural, because we've started this discussion. Actually, the last meeting we had Joe Mariana come and visit us and talk about his the rationale behind the budget and what's on the line and what programs are being cut. And today's meeting was an outgrowth of that. So the Council of Governments is working on it. But it requires the county, who is currently a major funder, significant funder, to be part of that discussion. We can't do it in a vacuum.
But the county participates in the Council of Governments.
It does.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm glad that you do. And I will just have to say, as chairman of the Council of Governments, that we've had many opportunities for collaboration, and we're taking advantage of those, not only the Health Insurance Consortium, but also working on dog control, and we're working on cell towers, and this goes on and on of collaborative efforts that the Council of Governments are putting together. And I want to thank the county for their support through staffing, as well as availability of facilities and so on. It's been very, very much appreciated. So thank you for that as well.
And just to follow that up, Peter, at the end of the discussion at TCOG about these cuts, there were some informal conversations about, well, gee, maybe some of the towns can pick up some of the funding. So I wasn't asked to come to the meeting today, unless I missed the email, but I wasn't asked to be part of that discussion today. And I think that's appropriate, that the towns are sort of sorting it through and trying to decide how they might be able to be involved. And I did talk with Nancy Zaylor just before this meeting about what happened at the meeting and you know, how a proposal might sort of co-evolve. So, you know, I think it certainly is something that a number of us are working on. So I have a question, Don. Do you have an announcement to make about the consortium?
I'd be happy to make that announcement. Received information today from the New York State Insurance Department that our certificate of authority for the New Tompkins County Health Insurance Consortium is in the mail. They've signed it and sent it off. So I want to thank the county legislature for hanging in there as another one of our group. Whenever the chips got down and we just said we're going to hang in there and do this together, and we did it. So thank you, and it's with great pleasure that I make that announcement for sure.
Well, great, and thank you, Don. Together with Joe, the two of you really were sort of a force that they had to deal with, and you wouldn't go away. They tried to get you to go away, and you know, put up one obstacle after another. And this is now a model for New York State, and we understand that other counties are interested in the same model. We have some feedback to offer to the state about how this kind of consortium could be broadened and strengthened, but really we wouldn't be anywhere near this point without you individually, and we really thank you. In fact, we thanked you a few times on the floor here, but you haven't usually been here, so well, it's a real pleasure that you happen to be here tonight, and we can thank you in person.
Well, you're welcome, and it's very gratifying to be part of a group that's willing to pull together, and this is just part of what the Council of Governments is all about, and I think that's what is going to pull us all through this tough financial time, is find ways to collaborate, blend resources, and make this happen, and make the commitment to each other that we're going to hang in there for the long haul. Thank you.
Any other questions for Don?
I got a town board meeting to run. See you later.
Okay. Thanks so much. All right. For the first legislative privilege of the floor, it is my honor to have a Distinguished Youth Award nomination tonight. And it's ironic the right word to be honoring the youth of our community at a time when we're faced with these kinds of decisions. So, welcome, everybody. Come on in. These are young people from the OURS Teen and Tween Leadership Council. OURS stands for Opportunity, Understanding, Respect, Success. It's a program in the village of Freeville in Dryden, New York. And I'm going to let Julie Newman, the youth worker who's made this nomination read the nomination for you.
Hi, I'm Cheyenne Hoff.
Hi, I'm Sadie Hoff.
Hi, I'm Brianne Marshall.
I'm
Sharon
Hoff.
Wait a second.
I'm Nick Pat.
Sharon Pat, Nick's mom.
Great, thank you.
So just to tell you a little bit about the Ours and Yours program while the slideshow goes, which Nick is going to help us with since I'm not sure how to use the remote. The Ours and Yours program provides opportunities for the youth living in mobile home parks in Freeville to participate in one-on-one mentoring and experiential learning activities, which are designed to build on 4-H life skills and Circle of Courage youth development strengths. There are approximately 35 youth enrolled annually. Yours, a Cornell University Public Service Center organization, provides volunteer mentors to the youth of Ours, a Dryden Youth Services program of Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County. The Ours Teen and Tween Leadership Council, from which these are representatives, is designed to provide youth with opportunities to develop socially, to build teamwork skills, to move into leadership roles, and to experience generosity with support of Cornell volunteer mentors to help guide them. This group had an exciting opportunity in the spring semester of 2009 to work with the United Way Focus Project. Through this project, the youth completed a community assessment, reviewed grants, allocated funds to local organizations. They photographed what they liked as well as things they wanted to improve in their communities, surveying community members throughout the process. This was to help the youth start thinking about the kinds of projects they would choose to fund with the United Way money, and they funded three wonderful local projects. The process, however, led to something even greater down the road, which was a list of priority project areas which the youth wanted to complete in their very own communities. What started out as this list became a letter to the landlord of Hanshaw Village Mobile Home Park and eventually a grant proposal. The resulting project, funded by the Robert Smith Community Partnership Grant, was a collaboration between Sharon Pat, parent at the Mobile Home Park, the Teen Leadership Council, myself, and a Cornell volunteer. The idea for the community members' neighborhood came out of this list that the youth made. And they and their parents and the other tenants there in the Mobile Home Park helped to make possible what became a playground, park benches, and a bunch of other things that hopefully the slideshow can demonstrate.
Kevin, does he have to be... Got it.
Push forward, right?
Okay. Does he have to aim it at the computer or something? Or?
Yeah.
There we go. We're changing pictures. So this is the tire swing that they're working on together. It was completely homemade. You know, they found a tractor tire. This is a geodome climber that Sharon found online that is approved for all different ages. So it was an element that was supposed to be able to use by all the different kids, not just the little kids there in the green space. They're digging the holes there for these locust benches that they made. You can see everyone likes the tire swing. Yeah, this is a bench that they used to wait for the van and for the bus in the morning, and they put a shelter over top of it, too. And they built the picnic tables as well. And the landlord was inspired by the project enough to donate these swing sets that weren't there before, as well as the barbecues that were not there before either. And the basketball area there is the next project on the list, also with the same grant, is renovation of that area to make it safer.
Hi, I'm Sharon Pat again, Nick's mom. And as Julie said, we did this last year. We no longer live in the trailer park anymore, but had lived there for many years and got to know quite a few of the kids. And it's such a great program that they have. And, you know, these kids, just seeing them involved in not only putting the playground together, which absolutely there was nothing there, just green space. And so that to know that these kids were able to do that, and then the other things that the Hours program offers. My son, who's in a wheelchair, there's not a lot of opportunity out there for him to do the things. And with the Hours programs, Julie's been very, very good with him and, you know, took his needs into consideration about all the different field trips and stuff like that. So that's been a great success. There would have been much more kids here, but they're in different sports tonight, so my daughter would have been here to talk too because she loves the program too. But thank you.
Thank you. Would any of you like to speak? No? 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 Nick? Do you want to say anything? All right. Well, thank you. Do you still have more slides?
Yeah.
Okay. This is great. All right. Looks like you learned a lot of stuff in doing this project, and we're really delighted that you're here. Thank you very much. And we have a plaque. That is the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to ARIS Teen and Tween Leadership Council in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, September 2010. And this is sponsored by Banks Ambulance Service, Tompkins County Legislature, Cougar Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and A&B Awards and Engraving. So I'll give that to all of you. And we have a few goodies, especially the gift card to Purity Ice Cream. So I don't know if you have time to go there right now, but here you go. Well, let's give this one to Nick.
I'll keep it safe for you.
Again, thank you all very much, and keep up the fantastic work. Somebody can hit the lights. Thank you.
Tell them they can watch this again on TV. Tell them they're running home for that.
All right. Anyone else for the legislator privilege of the floor? Carol?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'm not sure there's anything more important as we face the future than giving messages to our youth that there are ways in which they can influence their own environments. There are so many messages that we get today about the ways in which we can't influence our environments that was very inspiring. One of the ways in which we can influence our environment is in our choice of housing and the ways that we live. And I had occasion this last weekend to attend the Green Buildings Open House sponsored by Tompkins County, you know, Cooperative Extension. I think there were 30 homes that were on display. I have the brochure here that I will pass around for people to look at. And I only got to visit two of these homes, but it was really quite inspiring about the ways both small and large, from the solar dryers that were out there, people's clotheslines with signs on them, to bigger, fancier ways that people had chosen to build energy efficiency into their homes. So that was quite inspiring, and I urge you, I think there's an annual event, I urge you to go look at that next year or to read more about it. And the White House was so impressed with what we did here in Ithaca that today they announced that they are going to be putting solar collectors and solar hot water heater back on top of the White House. The chairman of the White House Council on Environmental Quality and Stephen Chu, the energy secretary, announced those plans, as well as I think they were expected, although I couldn't find the link, to announce that they're also approving two large solar collection systems in the California desert. So we can make changes a little bit at a time. And then I just wanted to point out that the Greater Ithaca Art Trail, which I did not get to attend last weekend, but which we all have a chance to attend since I was at the houses, we have a chance to attend October 16th and 17th. And I'll pass around that postcard as well, 11 to 5, and there are a number of sites one can visit and support our artists. So thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Anyone else? Jim?
My only comment was, it's always gratifying to see young people come here and talk to us about what they're doing. I especially love the kid who spoke without notes. You know, I think we should keep his name because he's going to be here someday.
Thank you, Jim. Mike?
People in the eastern part of Tompkins County who own real estate have been under a cloud for the last few years, having to do with the lawsuit filed by the Onondaga Nation that included the east part of the town of Groton, the east part of the town of Dryden, and the east part of the town of Caroline, along with a huge swath of property from Lake Ontario down to the Pennsylvania border, including all of Tioga and Cortland counties, and all the counties north of them and south. That lawsuit has been winding its way through the court, U.S. District Court, and it wasn't reported in the Ithaca Journal, I don't believe, but that suit was dismissed, I believe last week, by the District Court. It will probably be appealed to the Circuit Court and likely to the Supreme Court. However, this is good news for property owners. Since that lawsuit was filed, hundreds and hundreds of thousands, probably millions of dollars, have had to be spent by property owners for title insurance every time that they get mortgages or transfer property within this Indian land claim. So from that standpoint, and I certainly understand all the arguments that there are, but starting with the Oneida 2 case and the Oneida land claim, the United States Supreme Court decided in an 8-0 decision that these claims were simply too long, too old, and that was what was followed in the recent claim. So I thought it was very interesting that this cloud is beginning to lift from property owners in my part of the county.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin?
I want to ditto what Jim said, just about how encouraging it is to see our young people taking the lead and doing some of the work they are doing in our community, and know that regardless of what happens with us with budget, that they know that we are supportive of their work, appreciate it, and respect the fact that they do take those roles really, really seriously. I want to take a moment just to wave my little United Way platform and remind all of my colleagues and other people out there in TV land that it is that time of year for United Way pledges. United Way supports a number of agencies in our community that allows them to do the work that they are doing. Without the United Way support, which comes from all of us, I know for many agencies it will be difficult to continue to serve the people who they serve. So please give, and give generously. The United Way campaign goal for 2011 is $2,111,111. So it's the whole 2011 theme thing going on. So please support and give and turn your forms in, all my colleagues, and I'll keep reminding you. I don't know that it's my job, but I will. The other thing, speaking in the spirit of giving, Love Knows No Bounds, who I'm sure many of you know about, has embarked on an Haiti earthquake relief effort. They are trying to ship out a number of goods to those in Haiti who are still suffering tremendously from the devastation of the earthquake last year. And so those of us at the Greater Ithaca Activity Center and other agencies I know throughout the community is helping with that effort, and we at GIEC are asking for some of the things and asking for everyone to help support this. They're looking for things like mosquito nets and insect repellents, for dried foods, no canned goods because it is too heavy for freight and for shipping, hygiene products, toothbrushes, toothpaste, soap, shampoos, that sort of stuff. So if you are feeling the generosity bug, we ask that you please show your act of kindness by donating any of these items. We know it's sort of late in the date. If you can, by October 8th, we'll collect and pass it on to Love Knows No Bounds so they can have their shipment go out some point around the 17th or 18th of October. So please show your support. And I just want to say congratulations to the Multicultural Resource Center and the citizens of Tompkins County for what I understood was a very successful First Peoples Festival this past Saturday at the DeWitt Park, and also the Downtown Ithaca Lions for the Apple Harvest Festival. I think I don't remember seeing that many people on the commons in any in a long time since the Ithaca Festival, so it seemed like it was a very, very successful event, and congrats to them for it.
Thank you, Leslie. Frank.
Thanks, Martha. First, the bad news. I know you all rushed home after the last meeting and pulled out your nice egg bills. Just to remind you to do it again, because they raised the price of billing us. Some of you got a residential rate increase of 3 cents. Not a lot, but when they added that to the 89 cents or so to create the bill, they're breaking all this down. That was the residential piece. The rate increase, they didn't waste any time implementing it. We all were tagged already, and some of it's retroactive. Stay tuned. It's not over yet. You'll be billed even more, which I know you'll enjoy. Good news, or nice news anyway, on behalf of a bunch of us sitting around this dais attended the youth luncheon last Wednesday, and I'm sorry Nancy ducked out, but she really orchestrated a lot of that, and she really ought to take a bow. That was one of the nicest luncheons that all of us were to in quite some time, and it was very well attended. Unfortunately, Will had a Will, who is not with us tonight, but not as a result of the luncheon.
Just coincided with the luncheon.
It just coincided. Thank you, really. The other announcement I want to make, I know Marcia has already done some of this. I want to put this notice up. On Saturday, October 16th, remember the last unwanted household pharmaceutical collection we did? There's another one coming up on the 16th. Supposed to be, we supposedly collected more in that day than any other community did in one day in the United States. Believe it or not.
What does that say about us?
Well, Tompkins County's on drugs, right? Is that what it means?
Tompkins County's off of drugs.
At any rate, I'll put this poster up, but October 16th at TCAT again, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Marcia did do a release, and probably will do another reminder. After you drop your pills off, you can head for Brooktondale. It's the same day as the Brooktondale Apple Festival. And you're all welcome. I hope some of you will make that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Sure, go ahead.
Can I just add a tie between what Frank just talked about and the Green Buildings open house? Just a tidbit.
The drugs?
No, not drugs. I think it's, my theory is that we don't actually take the drugs we're prescribed because we're so healthy here. And if you eat apples, go and eat an apple, you won't need them. But I learned on the Green Buildings open house, a connection between sort of policy, public policy and permission, regulation, and what we can do individually. All of those people who have put electricity cells on top of their house, who can sell electricity back to NYSEG, but NYSEG is only is allowed to charge them 15 cents a kilowatt hour to buy their electricity, but only pays 4 cents a kilowatt hour set by the PSC when they buy it from you if you're producing excess. So there is a clear place while you're waiting in to the PSC, Frank. I'd appreciate if you pass along that tidbit and how that is not right.
Thank you, Carol. Peter, did I see your hand up?
Yeah, I've been inspired to direct a question to the my honorable colleague on the far corner there. I'm boggled at the fact that Tompkins County was number one in drug recovery of any county throughout the United States. The reason my mind boggles at that because those counties include Los Angeles County and Manhattan County. Those are counties with lots and lots of people. Mm-hmm. Is it how possibly, or did percentage. You make that up or what? Is that no. something you read?
That's what I read, and maybe they're not collecting drugs in those counties.
They just don't bring theirs. Don't.
It was written by Kat McCarthy of the Solid Waste Management Division, and then Marsha Lynch. Was this?
I see. Okay. You're right. Maybe they're not collecting them in Los Angeles.
Marsha, do you have any more data on this?
12 officials.
It is pretty amazing.
I don't have any more specific data. Actually, that information came from Ed Gottlieb, who is the pretreatment coordinator at the Ithaca area water treatment plant. He just sent out some more detailed data today, and I don't have the actual numbers, but said that that data also showed that this area is still in the lead for that.
All right, so we're going to have to break our own record the next time. So, all right, Betsy, Brian, and then Kathy.
Yeah, just a clarification on this point. Actually, the rest of the country, they sell their drugs. They don't turn them out. Something about supplementing their budgets, or I don't know.
Okay.
No.
That's from a police officer. Notice.
There's a creative idea, Kathy.
I just want to clarify. It's not just old. Prescription drugs. It's supervised collection of a bunch of like liquids, inhalers, EpiPens. And what I want to say is we're educated in this community and we know that this can get in the water table. I think that and the good publicity that we got from our local groups is why we collected, what was it, something like 55 drums or a bunch of 55-gallon drums, and we will break our record. But I think it's also a safety issue because some people really don't, if you've got toddlers around or if you're a grandparent and you're going to have kids around, you don't want them possibly stumbling on that. Of course, you don't want somebody stumbling on that, so you want to get rid of it.
1,741 pounds, almost a ton of medication. So, all right, so everybody go through your medicine chest for the next time. Anyone else? Thank you very much. We do not have a special presentation tonight. For my report, a couple of things. Since I don't usually do legislative privilege, I would just mention that October 8th is this Friday is the last day to register to vote. For anybody who's listening who's not registered, that's the deadline, and you can do it online with Tompkins County Board of Elections. Jim? Go ahead.
Do you have a remote to shut off the projector?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right. So Friday's the deadline to register to vote. Commission from NYSEC that I have been on released its final report September 30th. The report is called New York State Administering Medicaid in New York State, the County Perspective, and then issued a press release called Now is the Time for the State to Take Over Medicaid. This is the main part of the report, and I'll put it on top of the mailboxes there. I'll also forward to each of you the press release because it's all the report is online, but it includes not just this document, which came out of the result of our committee meetings, but also a report from Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch and another report from the Rockefeller Institute that both sort of back up the notion that New York State really should be talking not just about taking over administration, but taking over the entire program of Medicaid. And obviously it's hanging over all of us in terms of our budget decisions, being 29% of Tompkins County's property tax levy goes directly for the payments to Medicaid. And that's not administration. That's directly to the payments for the health care for people who meet the income eligibility guidelines. And I've long said that the people, that the level of government that makes the decisions on eligibility, on what services are included, should be the level of government that pays for the program. And that's a theme in the report. So I look forward to NYSEC sort of carrying this ball to through the state legislature and the governor's office. They've also sent it to the staffs of each of the gubernatorial candidates, and we expect to be continuing to lobby about this. NYSEC also submitted sent out a press release about about the property tax cap proposals, and we have resolution about that later on. But I wanted to, there's a PowerPoint that Steve Aquario, the executive director of NYSEC, has put together, and I'm going to be working on shortening what he's got and hope presenting that to the full legislature, maybe at our next meeting. So sort of you can see what NYSEC is, how they've framed the whole issue, and for us to help educate the folks who are watching our meetings as well. Fully 90% on average, 90% of the property tax levies of all the counties in New York State go to 9 different mandates that the state imposes on county governments. So it's a big bill. One piece of good news from the state, Governor Patterson, in his wisdom, has decided to appoint Joe Mariana to the Indigent Defense Commission. Now, what is the formal name of it, Joe?
I don't know what the long name is. It's the Indigent Defense Board. I think it's a 15-person board that's been assembled by the governor to look at that program.
And just found out today that he has, in fact, been appointed. So I think that's great kudos to Joe individually, and it's also a great position for our county to be in, to be able to talk about the work that the task force did last year and the excellence of our own program as a model for the rest of New York State. So congratulations, and thank you for taking your time to do that. So that's my report. Any questions? I have one appointment. Thank you, Kathy. To the Civil War Commission, I will appoint Scott Callan as a member of the Civil War Commission. So, Joe Mariana, County Administrator's Report.
Well, I know this will break your heart, because I'm sure you're saying to yourself you haven't heard enough from me over the past couple of weeks as maybe you'd like, but I don't have a report tonight, so I'm going to pass.
Well, sorry. Frank?
That's right. I know. We rehearsed this. Joe, I do have a question. I was reminded of it when Don Barber was speaking with regard to the Council of Governments. At some point, are we going to get an accounting, if you will, of what it costs the county to support the Council of Governments, both in time and money?
We can prepare that for you, Frank. I think you know that much of it is in the form of support staff provided by Michelle. And we have tried to quantify that. Beyond that, it is a lot of in-kind contributions of time on the part of a number of county employees. We could try to put together an estimate of the value of that in-kind contribution.
Just a ballpark.
Frank, did you mean for the council or the consortium, the healthcare consortium?
No, but the council itself, because as Don described it, it was not just we've devoted time not just for the insurance consortium, but all the effort a lot of us have put in with the SPCA and that the dog control piece that we were helping them with. And Don mentioned two or three items. And it just reminded me that we've been at this now for 3 or 4 years. And it'd be good to just get an idea of what the value of that was and has been.
I think we would want to show both sides of that. There have been in-kind contributions. Those are costs. But also the benefits that we are getting out of it, as you pointed out, Frank. I mean, just the benefit of being in the consortium, we've estimated at $250,000 a year. So we'd want to show both sides of that benefit.
Because my impression is that there's more work for that council to do, and everybody's looking at ways to save a few bucks. It'd be good to have some idea of what we could expect or maybe not expect.
Jim?
I believe I'm right, but there is no money in our current budget for support of the Council of Government.
No, there's not a line item appropriation, and TCOG is talking about developing a very modest budget for next year. To the extent they do, our contribution would be just a continuation of in-kind. There wouldn't be a cash contribution, but they're talking about a budget of $5,000 to $10,000 next year to pay for studies as they come up and things like that, but again, a very modest budget. The only contribution, Jim, that you would, it's not a line item, is what we contribute of our time.
There's the proposal that Joe's talking about. I've asked to be on the GO agenda to report about TCOG. I assume that'll happen soon. But the Joe was met with a couple of other TCOG members to work through what would a proposal for members to contribute financially look like. And the concept was pretty well accepted at the last meeting, but the dollar level was, I guess, $750 per member was proposed. The dollar level that was, accepted to be shopped around to the town boards was $250 each. So that is pretty modest, but it was suggested that the supervisors and the mayor and should consider including that in their budgets. County Attorney John Jonathan.
In the past couple of weeks, I've heard from several of you, and I'm sure, some of you have seen some articles and brought them to my attention about the issue of municipalities funding various programs. And the questions come up in particular about, does the county have authority to fund youth services and some of the senior programs, particularly like FoodNet and Gadabout? The answer to that question is definitely yes, yes, and yes. Obviously, the issue has also come up with the various municipalities other than the county. I can't give opinions to towns on whether they can or cannot fund those programs, but I would think and hope that they would reach that same conclusion. And I know that there's been, discussion of whether the county could continue, but also what would happen if the county doesn't continue. But I believe that municipalities and the county can fund these programs.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Peter.
Yeah, John, I have a question about this. I've been had much discussion recently about the towns, in particular with regard to that. And my understanding after talking to a couple of town attorneys is that a town cannot provide funding to a an outside party, a private party, without some assurance that the town residents are going to get something back for that funding, and that all that is required in order to allow the town to fund them is to write a contract with whoever it is you're funding, saying what the town residents are going to get back for it. And I've looked at some of those contracts, and they're very, very vague. They're very vague in general. They don't, it's not the kind of contract that you generally imagine is written between two businesses. Now, is that the same? Is that the same kind of law that applies to counties, or is there a different law?
No, the law is generally the same. In the New York Constitution, counties and all municipalities are not allowed to give to private organizations. Just give, basically, unless it's otherwise authorized by law. And in the state law, there are many provisions about what you are allowed to give to, and it usually says that you can have a contract for those things. It doesn't say that donation, but a contract to provide services. So, for example, there's a authorized in the law that you can have a contract to provide services for the elderly in your county. So it seems to me if you have a contract with a food net or a gadabout, and they basically provide services, that the type of services that they normally provide, then you're meeting that requirement. And all these agencies that are in the county budget, we do have contracts with them. And the same would be true of towns, basically. Now, there's some difference in what some towns can authorize versus the county, because some things that we support are authorized only in the county law, but others are in more general law, like the general municipal law, which would apply to all municipalities, and others are supported by, like, youth services in the executive law. Elder laws has many of the senior citizens provisions, so it's spread out, but the principle is basically the same.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
I distributed this afternoon a summary of the county's audit, which we received the hard copy of the document last week. If you look at this document, the executive summary gives you some historical context of the county's reputation being probably the most stable government in the state of New York, because I can't tell you that if you look at the numbers, they don't vary much from one year to the next. If you look at the general fund balance, we've had a general fund balance, unreserved balance, between $11 and $12 million for the last 5 years. We ended up 2009 with $11 million. 2008, it was $12 million. The year before was $12 million, which is quite remarkable. Our assets on our balance sheet pretty much are the same every year, the same magnitude. The only concern you might have is government has grown, and our unreserved fund balances remain constant, which would signal that it's shrinking proportionally. But as far as stable, we have a great reputation for stability. If you have insomnia, this is a good document to look at. Also, we posted on the website the financials, the county's financials for 2009. Unfortunately, at this time of year, apple harvest is followed by petition of foreclosure. And what you got in your basket today, in basket, was a listing of the 153 properties that will be receiving certified mailing saying they haven't paid their taxes under in the prescribed time. It's the beginning of a process which requires that the taxes be settled up within 90 days. Generally, We average 150 parcels a year that get into this situation. This year, the only thing that's striking about it is the mix is a little different. We had more residential parcels than normal. And the outstanding taxes for residential properties are quite startling. We have 20 parcels out of 70 plus that have over $20,000 worth of taxes due within the next 90 days. We have about the commercial properties, so there's no surprises there. And we would expect that by the end of the prescribed time period, January 14th, that this 150 number of parcels will be down to probably 60, and ultimately probably 25 by the time the period expires. The other thing I want to bring to your attention is that on October 19th at 4 o'clock, prior to the next legislative session, we'll be having the annual meeting of Tompkins Tobacco Asset Securitization Corporation. Frank, got your ears? You know, it welcomes tobacco users.
Thank God for those tobacco users.
But that's a meeting that we hold every year to approve the budget, which was the corporation was done in order to take advantage of selling off the settlement from the tobacco companies, and the county retains about $650,000 a year of revenues that go into unallocated revenues every year, and we issued about $8 million worth of bonds, which paid for a few facilities within the county. So it's always an exciting meeting to attend. And that's my report.
Are there any questions for David? Carol?
Yeah. Is there any change in procedure about how we notify people who are on this list of?
Well, at this point, we notify everybody by certified mail. And so what you were referring to is a change of when we get down to the notification during the auction. And we will we certainly learn our lesson from last year on that regard.
There were also some properties last year, and I don't know if that was for the auction. Maybe it was further down the line at the auction, but about nearby property owners or people in other people in these people's lives who might be able to make a difference in helping them work out payment schedules and dealing with the paperwork. Is there anything further we can do or used to do in trying to make that happen?
Well, we have we spend quite a bit of time in outreach, making sure that that we are not harming anybody other than unless they can, we alert the Department of Social Services and the Department of Mental Health and try to extend as much as possible. And that's been our practice and will continue to be our practice.
Isn't that one way that you get from 150 down to 25?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? I actually have a question, David. You said government has grown, but our staff roster is pretty stable.
The budget has grown. And so the relation proportional, our fund balance to the total amount of money we invest every year, that fund balance is shrinking percentage-wise, but it's been stable. So on one hand, you can take great pride in, we are the stablest. That's our billboard.
Thank you very much, David. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Peter.
Yes, I'd like to move, I guess, is that right, that we add to the agenda the thing in your yellow packet, this yellow thing that says not on the agenda. There are two yellow. Only mine are yellow?
Yeah.
No.
Your special
the originals are yellow.
Because it originated with
committee chairs or the individual member moving a resolution through yellow.
So it's called Resolution C. Okay, read the title, Peter.
Resolution C, urging New York State to significantly cut the unfunded mandates that cause local property tax increases before opposing attack on local property taxes.
You so move, and Frank is second. And we need 10 votes to add it to the agenda. Is there any discussion?
I have a question about how this is different from the version
that's
in our packets.
Well, can we get it on the agenda before we discuss it? Well, this is just to add it to the agenda.
All right, this is to add it to the agenda. Peter?
Yes, I would like to also move that it be added to the agenda and brought at the same place in the meeting where the other resolution about tax cap.
That's appropriate. They are different, Carol. So. All right, all in favor of adding to the agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is 13-1. Thank you. That'll be on the agenda under unfinished business. The consent agenda is our resolutions that are an appointment to be one to be withdrawn. I'm sorry. Jim, I'm told you're supposed to withdraw a resolution.
I'm withdrawing resolution B in yellow that was in your red folder, and I would move that.
Okay. I don't think you have to move it. You just withdraw.
I'll just withdraw that.
It is so withdrawn. Sorry. Okay.
Those short naps really help.
Listen, we all have our script master over here, so thank you, Kathy. All right, the consent agenda are resolutions and with appointments that are considered non-controversial, and I think that gets us down to one item. Is that right? Yes. Resolution A, acceptance of a United States Environmental Protection Agency grant to provide reduce, reuse, recycle, and rebuy 4Rs in Tompkins County Schools, Tompkins County Solid Waste Management Division. Is there a motion for the consent agenda? Leslie moves, Pat seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. First report is the Government Operations Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
The committee has not met since our last meeting. We'll be meeting again on October 21st. We have had a meeting again of the subcommittee on minutes, which I know you're all wondering about with bated breath. We so far circulated that among the Government Operations Committee, a proposal. We've been receiving back comments on that from members. It's a tough nut to crack, folks. People aren't going to be happy no matter which way we go. We're trying to be careful and not put too much of a burden on our staff, recognizing the fact that we have quite a variation in minute takers between the legislature and the committees and the some of the agencies that we deal with. We'll be coming back to the Government Operations Committee with more proposals and see what we can do to move this ahead.
Thank you very much, Mike. Any questions? Peter.
I just wondered if you had any idea when you thought it might come to this body?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee. Pam Magasy, Chair.
Yes, the Planning Committee has not met since our last meeting. It will meet tomorrow at 3:30.
Thank you. I'm not even going to ask about the Census Committee. So. Budget and Capital Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. I always love it when David Squires breaks in new material in his report. Second item is that we have a meeting October 7th of the EBC at 4 o'clock right here. And I asked that question about TCOG, or made the statement about them not having a budget, because I think as that group goes forward, that is a question we're going to have to answer as a group to see what we can do to help that organization in a small financial way. in the future. Other than that, I will take questions. I have nothing else.
Any questions for Jim? Would you remind us that, and remind the public, after Thursday night we have how many more discussion meetings and when do we start voting?
Well, the next discussion meeting is October 12th after October 7th, and then we move into, I don't have the next day, it's 18?
14.
Is that, and we have that on the schedule as a voting meeting?
Correct.
As a voting meeting, but we still have, I believe we had to postpone mental health, and that will be coming in the next two meetings somewhere. But 14th would be the voting meeting, the beginning of the voting.
Okay. Anything else for Jim? Thank you. Public Safety Committee, Nathan Chinagawa, Chair.
Yes, Public Safety Committee met yesterday, had a 30-minute long meeting. It was very short. We had an update from the sheriff. We had Pat Buchel from probation did a quick update about the recidivism study, and Frank, we asked Pat to send a note to you specifically to your email box, and so about what she reported with the recidivism update. But basically, it's still going on. All the letters and work has been submitted, and Dina Bodner has been authorized as a researcher for that study. And I also did just a quick update on the Secure Communities Program, which INS, the Immigration Service, and ICE have. And just to let people know that this is something that's going to come to New York State soon. It's basically a program where, and I was wrong yesterday, Brian, where basically every time a person is booked at the jail, their fingerprints are sent now. Once this program is implemented in New York State, and it's already implemented in California, Texas, and Florida, once their fingerprints are put in, their fingerprints get sent not only to the FBI, like they already are, but also to the Department of Homeland Security so that they could be checked for their immigration status. And so New York State is not enrolled in that program yet. But when we do, when New York State is, counties actually have the option to opt out or not. And so it's a discussion that we should have when that time comes. All right. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Nathan. Any questions for Nathan? All right. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
When we met last month, we spent a portion of our time discussing the resolution that was pulled from the agenda. It had to do with change in language from using the words mental retardation to more developmental disabilities. And so we are going to continue to have the discussion and include our mental health, more of our mental health professionals in that discussion, and hopefully we'll have the resolution return to us. The subcommittee that's working on the diversity plan met again this past Sunday, and we continue to put a lot of time into trying to tweak bits and pieces of their plan so that we can present it to you.
Thank you, Leslie. Any questions?
I just want to add one quick thing, Martha, that, you know, as I think of diversity and inclusion and how it goes hand in hand with sometimes with economic development, one of the things that we don't always think about just in terms of, one of the things we don't think about a lot is the role that some of our more social and cultural organizations, places, and events play in our diversity and inclusion efforts. And so I want to say thank you to those of you who were there for the opening of the Kitchen Theater, the new Kitchen Theater, because I think it's one of those things that the Kitchen does a good job, like most of our other local community theaters, in trying to bring a diverse group of people to Ithaca, as well as a diverse lineup of shows. And being where they are adds a whole new dimension to an end of town that has a very diverse population of people living, and not far off from where they're located, many people who fall into our low-income category. And I think there are opportunities in all of it for cultural events. I mentioned the First People's Festival and other things that are going on. For sometimes we don't think about it, and it occurred to me when that was happening that just how hand-in-hand these things do go for so many people in this community to sort of get themselves out there, get themselves out of the rut, and to be recognized as valuable citizens regardless of where they stand. So I just wanted to share that little tidbit because it was in my head. But thank you.
Thank you very much, Leslie. And that was a great event. So. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to announce that the committee will be meeting on the 13th at regular time and place. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we're going to try to have a proclamation brought forward for our next county legislative meeting. And I want to announce also that the health department is pushing flu shots and the clinics, as well as rabies clinics. It's still around. I'll have a more in-depth report for you at the next meeting. We've been wending our way through the situation with several health aides, and Joe and I, Martha, have been talking about that. That's doing okay. And Joe told me earlier today that he's still working with our candidate for the public health director. We should have hopefully some resolve here pretty quickly. I also want to acknowledge to Nathan that I did receive the email and read it. It was a very short one, and I appreciate that. And for those of you that don't remember this, because you may not have been around when we approved the new health department building, Nathan and I made a deal that we would, remember there's a 60-year window on that building where Cornell has an option at some point. That we don't own the land. They own the land. We just pay a modest lease, I believe, on it. But Nathan and I made a deal that within that 60 years, if Cornell invokes their option, probably they won't do it, but to take the building back, both Nathan and I agreed that we would be around to witness that.
Yeah.
And I wanted to acknowledge and compliment Nathan on his admitting just a few moments ago that he'd made a mistake yesterday at the public safety meeting. It's good to do that. I mean, I made a mistake back in 1961, Nathan, and I acknowledge that all the time. So it's good. It's good for the soul. It really is.
Oh, thank you.
I knew it. Somebody said it was a short agenda.
I have an executive session too.
What was the mistake? What was the mistake in 1961?
I'll tell you after.
Oh. Okay. Oh,
that's one of those.
Might be subject to foil. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to foil it.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dooley Kiefer, Chair.
Thank you. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee met on October 1st, and we heard from another Pine Tree Road resident about their concerns. Commissioner Marks reported that the ITCTC is checking its historic truck count records with Pine Tree Road in mind, and his staff, the highway staff, has done some additional traffic counts. And there should be a public meeting to update folks on the project sometime this fall. I don't know when yet. But the planned project to address bike and pedestrian travel is not likely to change the truck traffic on the residential portion of Pine Tree Road between Route 79 and Snyder Hill. There's already a fair amount of truck traffic there, not a lot given the fact that it's a designated truck route by the state, but the pedestrian and bike improvements should not have anything to do with changing truck traffic on that portion of Pine Tree Road. It may affect the portion of Pine Tree Road closer to East Hill Plaza. New York State Parks, we learned, has been in touch with the municipalities through which the Black Diamond Trail goes, or which may be interested in the Black Diamond Trail in particular, to tell them that although Parks has money for materials, Parks does not have staff to make use of materials for the trail. And so there are discussions about some cooperative arrangement whereby in the few days of off-season between when roads are paved and construction starts the next year, some of our highway staff and town's highway staff may be able to put some time in on that trail and make use of the materials that the state parks have. So that's hopeful. Highway Department, Highway Division continued to discuss with us what the proposed budget cuts would mean for them. And Bill Sesney mentioned that usually after a major rainstorm of the sort we had this past week, there would be a tremendous amount of cleanup that has to be done. But due to the work of the ditching crew over the last few years, that was not the case this time. Our ditches and roads accommodated the runoff quite well, and we didn't have to send people out to do cleanup. So that's a cautionary tale for the future. We discussed a chronology of public notice and public participation opportunities for highway projects. That's something that has been being talked about for a while. We finally had a handout that we could look at in detail, and more work will be done on that. I'm glad to see that moving forward. And finally, the Solid Waste Division gave us a presentation on the proposed improvements for the site plan at the Recycling and Solid Waste Center, and it looks very hopeful to me. It's very promising, and it'll be good when Solid Waste can give the short presentation on the entire project to the legislature, which will happen sometime this fall. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Frank?
Julie, I heard you mention just now that the state has material available for the Black Diamond Trail, and there might be a possibility that one of our highway crews might be able to devote some time to utilizing that material. If I remember right, when Bill Sesney came here to present the preliminary look at the budget, we're losing a highway crew.
Yes.
Because of budgetary constraints. At what point will the decision to use personnel be left up to this board, because that may not resonate as a priority at the time that it has to take place, as far as us diverting staff to that won't be available for work that might have a higher priority than the Black Diamond Trail.
As I tried to make clear, but I guess I didn't, it's only possible for our equipment with the equipment operator to do such thing as work on the Black Diamond Trail if we're finished with road construction season and before it starts again the next spring. So there might be a few days in the fall and a few days in the spring when this could happen.
Oh, like a window. Okay.
It's definitely not going to take priority over our regular work.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Peter.
Julie, that was a very complete and concise report. There's one comment I'd like to make on one item in the report, namely the Pine Tree Road Bridge. You stated in the report that raising the Pine Tree, if I got it right, maybe I didn't hear, but that the raising of the Pine Tree Road Bridge height would not affect the truck traffic in the southern portion of Pine Tree Road. I think, and those of you who recall, we had a speaker today from the Pine Tree Road residents, Krista Bissell, and That's what they're saying. They're saying the opposite of that, and that's their major complaint. But I think it's fair to say that, that the statement that you made is a conjecture and not a fact. It may be an informed conjecture, but still in all, it's a conjecture.
I'd use the word likely.
Well, right, but it's still a conjecture. It's a conjecture that it's likely.
Until it happens, we won't know.
No, of course, but one can, in fact, in various ways, look at present patterns of truck traffic and make a conjecture which is much more informed by the actual data at the moment. And I believe we're going to do that, and I think that having that data will change that conjecture into much stronger likely or much weaker likely than it currently is. And that was long-winded, but I said that there is data that can be taken that will shed light on that question, and I don't think we should think of it as a fact at the moment until we get data that supports it.
I can tell you don't think of it as a fact, Peter. Thank you.
Anyone else for Dooley? Thank you, Dooley. For the Capital Plan Review Committee, we haven't met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is October 14th, Thursday. So, the minutes of the previous meetings, I would like to, I've been asked to hold aside the two longer minutes, September 7th and September 21st. Some people didn't have a chance to. They're fairly long, and since we had two at once, they've been asked to be held till the next meeting. So could I have a motion on the September 14th minutes?
Move.
Moved by Frank, seconded by Jim. Any comments on the September 14th minutes? All ready to vote. All in favor of those minutes? Please raise your hand. Any opposed?
No.
13-1, those are approved. All right, we have unfinished business, and I had asked Peter Stein to be chair of the ad hoc committee on property tax resolution, so I will turn it over to you, Peter.
Okay, well, the ad hoc committee on property tax resolutions met twice, once for some length of time, and the second time very briefly. And the outcome of the second meeting was that, well, let me say, at the first meeting, we started looking at the document which I had brought to the board, I guess, at our previous meeting. Is it only one meeting ago? Seems like many. And at that first meeting of the ad hoc committee, Martha introduced a resolution which she proposed should replace it. And we discussed that at some length. And then at the second meeting, we decided that we would bring both of those resolutions to you. They are not mutually exclusive or contradictory, and you could decide to pass both, you could decide to pass neither, you could decide to pass either, and none of those would be illogical decisions. So we bring those two to you. And I think it's appropriate, since it's unfinished business, that we consider the one that I presented to the group last time first and then make a decision on that and then go to the second. I've made a couple of changes which I hope you will accept. The first is that...
First, make the motion and put it on the floor.
Oh, okay. I'd like to make a motion to put it on the floor.
And read the title, please.
And the title is A Resolution Linking a Local Mandate Cap to Any Future Local Property Tax Levy Cap.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second? Pat, second that. This was at the back of your packet after the minutes, if people are looking for it.
Right.
It's called Resolution 148.
Yes.
So I'd like to ask your permission to... make a couple of changes to it. The second was left out inadvertently, which is the last two lines of the other resolution, namely asking that the resolution, if passed, be distributed to the appropriate people in state government, essentially.
So that would be a final resolve?
That would be the final resolve.
After the rest of it, okay.
Right. And the second is, I spoke to two of our colleagues here. I spoke to Dooley about it, and I spoke by email to Carol this morning. Both of them complained that there was nothing in the resolution regarding the income tax and our belief that we ought to raise the rates of the high-end income taxpayers.
Excuse me, Peter. Let me first ask Pat if that first change is acceptable.
Yes.
Okay.
What?
I want to confirm that the first change was acceptable with your seconder.
Oh, I see. Okay. Oh, yes. Is it? Yeah, thank you. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm new at this, but I'll get the hang one of these days. So anyway, I put in another whereas, which would be the final whereas. It would follow the now final whereas and be the final whereas. And I'd just like to read it to you. Whereas the financial challenges facing the state government could be partially, comma, albeit not fully, comma, met by raising the top personal income tax rate without adversely affecting the majority of New York residents. Want me to read that again?
Mm-hmm. Do you have that?
Kathy, I can give a copy to you.
Okay. Would you read it again, though?
Yeah.
Could you pass that to Kathy?
Whereas the financial challenges facing the state government could be partially, albeit not fully, met by raising the top personal income tax rate without adversely affecting the majority of New York residents.
Okay. Is that acceptable to you, Pat?
Yes.
Okay. Then that is anything else?
No.
Okay. So that becomes the resolution on the floor.
That becomes the resolution on the floor.
Okay. Discussion. Brian?
Are you finished?
No, I don't think so. I usually, when you introduce a resolution, you get to speak to it first.
Go for it.
Okay.
I didn't hear a second.
Yeah, Pat's second. So,
anyway, this is a complicated issue. It's more complicated than meets the mind. I've discussed it individually with probably half of the people in this, my colleagues, and I realize it's complicated. And so I'm afraid it's going to take a little time to go through the arguments for it, but I would like to be, we've had a short meeting, so I can take a lot of time without really delaying the end. Anyway, there's a couple of things I'd like to start with. We've been talking about mandates, unfunded mandates, for a long time. And I think it's important to make a couple of facts clear, which may be clear to everybody in this room, but not necessarily to our public, is that they would think that the public might think from our discussions that we think these mandates are terrible, terrible things. But we don't. We think they're wonderful things. That's not the issue. We don't have any problem with what is mandated in general. We certainly believe in an expanded Medicaid. We believe in the number of things that get mandated. But nonetheless, the issue is who pays for it. So that, it seemed to me, was important to clarify. The second is that the second point that I think that's important to make is that we would like many things, which has been said in this room quite often. We would like the state government to take over the Medicaid expense. If the state government took over the Medicaid expense, we would have money flowing in. We'd have huge amounts of money to spend because we spend so much of our money on mandated expenses. Our financial picture would be very good, would be fine. We could refund all of the cuts that we've made, which would be a good thing, and we'd give good service to our residents. So that's really important. And so we demand or ask very strongly that they either take back the unfunded mandates or take back part of them or do something like that. We argue that it's not fair that they make decisions in Albany and put the burden of paying for them on us. And I totally agree with that. It's not fair. But that's not the issue, unfortunately.
whether it's fair or not fair. The point is, they have the power to do that. And the statement that it's not fair, as far as I'm concerned, is a meaningless statement. It doesn't get you anywhere. This is a negotiation, and it's a negotiation between essentially two parties, between the counties and the state. And the great disadvantage that we have is that we are essentially powerless in that negotiation. It's not like a negotiation between two equal parties. Why? Because we have no cards in the negotiation, and they have all the cards. They have the right to make any decision that they want regarding our finances, more or less, I'm exaggerating. And one of the powers they have is to tell us that we can't raise our taxes more than 2% or 3% or 4%, and there's absolutely nothing we can say about that. And I believe that that is not a distant probability, but I happen to believe myself that it is an imminent probability. I read about it in the newspapers every day. I think the past two issues of the Ithaca Journal has had articles. One that said that Shelley Silver was now said he would negotiate with the next governor about what the tax cap ought to be. Another one that there has to be a tax cap. And I think we're really facing that. And I think we should not turn away from that. Because if we get the tax cap that Andrew Cuomo has proposed, namely 2%, I don't see how we can survive under the present regime. So I think we have to think about that very seriously. And I believe that pounding on the table is not the right way to do it. There's a couple of rules, I think, that are very important in negotiations. And one rule in negotiation, which I think is important and particularly important when you're negotiating with someone who is much more powerful than you are, is to try to see the situation from the other person's point of view. Try to see whether what you're saying is a legitimate thing to ask the other person to do. So let me just give you a few numbers about the finances of the state. The state and you can compare them in your mind to our situation. The state at the moment is facing a roughly $10 billion gap in its budget. Its expenses for next year are approximately $10 billion more than its receipts. That's number one. Number two, if you want to know how much does the state get from us in the payments that we give to them through these unfunded mandates, the answer to that is, for all counties taken together, is roughly the same. It's $10 billion. And that, by the way, is not the whole story, because that does not count the mandates to the school system, and it doesn't count the mandates to the cities and towns. My guess would be that it must be at least $15 billion if you put all three functions of government together. The schools have got lots of mandates, and the towns have considerable mandates. So they have a budget gap of $10 billion. They're getting payments from these bodies of about $15 billion. Now, where exactly are they supposed to get the money to relieve us of paying the mandates? The answer that everyone gives is through the income tax. Raise the income tax on the top end of the income tax level, the top 1 or 2% of taxpayers back to the levels that they were in the 1970s. Now, I found out how much money that generates. That generates $9 billion. $9 billion compared to essentially what we're complaining about, namely $10 billion for our mandates, and the $10 billion that they have to find someplace next year to balance their budget. If we were sitting there looking at that situation, we would say, if we are going to raise the income tax to $9 billion, and by the way, I haven't heard a single person on the in state government saying they want to go all the way up to the 1975 levels. So The fact is, let's put ourselves in their shoes. What would we be doing if we were in Albany facing this kind of a situation? If you think that the first thing we would decide to do is to look at the counties who apparently can pay their bills because we're not running, we don't have any gap in our budget, and say what we're going to do is to take some of the revenue that you owe us and just add it on to the $10 billion so that you can have an easier time. I think it is extremely unlikely that they will do that. Therefore, it seems to me that if we ask them to do this, it simply is not going to happen. The other thing that why do I think it's so obvious that they're going to give us a tax cap? Because it's an easy way for them to tell the taxpayers that they are controlling taxes. All they do is vote. And they say, look what we've done for you. We've kept your taxes down. It's so appealing, it's really hard to turn down, taken from their point of view. That kind of thinking is what led me to the resolution that I'm putting in front of you. It's not the best. The best would be the one that Martha is going to put in front of you, or the one that says, take it all back. That would be the best. But I think the best is impossible. And what I have presented to you, I believe, is a resolution that is the good. And what's good about it is that I believe that if we were to get this resolution, we could, in fact, survive. I'm desperately worried about next year because I see a tax cap and I see mandates which are going to go up another 2 or 3%. The resolution that I present to you says to the state, look, give us the minimum and we'll survive. What would be the minimum? The minimum would be just freeze the mandates at the point they are now. Now, I know that's not right. I know that's not right. They should have never done it in the first place. But the fact is that's where we are at this moment of time. Freeze them, and if you give us if you put on a tax cap, at least give us the cost of living. Suppose, and the other thing I put in this resolution says, make it part of the same legislation so that you can't just decide next year you're going to take part of it away. I mean, as an aside, one of the complaints that we have about the state is that they don't pay their bills, they change the rules in the middle of the stream, you can never count on anything from one year to the next. Very difficult to deal with them as negotiating partners. This thing says, let's make this one hard to change for you. So why do I think that we could live with that? I think that we could live with that because we got by this year. It wasn't good, but we're going to get by. We're going to get by with our books intact, and we're not going to be bankrupt. Therefore, if we are faced in next year's budget with a tax cap that lets us go up by the cost of living and ensures that nothing, no new charges are made by the state to us, then we can get by without making any additional cuts. What's more, there's something nice in this, because the freeze is at a dollar level. It's a freeze of probably something like, I don't know, what do we get, 90% of us, so it's like $30 million a year that we now send to Albany, and that freezes at $30 million forever. As long as this regime goes on, that means because of the inflation, the actual value of that $30 million decreases with the CPI, so that 5 years from now, that mandate cap would be 10% easier for us to pay than it is at the moment. Now, why could this be attractive? Why is it possible that this would be attractive to the state? Because it doesn't cost the state anything in 2011. They don't have to pay any, that we are not an additional burden. We'll give them the same flow of income that year that we give them this year. Now, that's obviously not something that they would like. They would like to see more income from us every year. But I believe that it's conceivable that they could live with that. I do not think that they could live with something that says that you have to find another $2 billion a year in addition to the $10 billion that you've got to find to close the budget because of lowering the mandates, by lowering the mandates. That is, I'm assuming that by significant you mean 10% or something like that. So that's the argument for it. I think that it's an example of this being good and the other resolution being best,
And the best is the enemy of the good, because I don't think we're going to get the best. And I think to not raise this as a possibility then eliminates the possibility of the good. So that's my argument.
Is that all? Thank you, Peter. Brian had his hand up first. Is that right?
Thanks, Martha. And just for the record, I think towards the beginning of that, I heard a little bit of conjecture in there, too. But that's okay. That's okay. First off, I want to thank Peter for taking the bull by the horns on this issue and creating the committee. And to me, it's not so much the details and what it is that we're going to ultimately agree, if we agree on anything. I think fundamentally we're probably all in the same ballpark. But just the fact that we need to bring this up, I think it's irresponsible on the part of candidates. It's too bad that it's this time of year that this sort of issue has to come to light, because it's very easy to speak to that. And probably the most prophetic thing I heard tonight came from Don Barber, who said, we've actually, our job is not to figure this out. You know, there's lots of minds that are going to figure this out. But we have to be able to educate the public, because, you know, they're always in little sound bites, and the only thing they hear is 5 seconds worth of stuff. And you hear, you know, as soon as you say, well, I'm against a tax cap, well, that goes against the grain of all of us. You know, of course we're going to be in favor of a tax cap. But they're only dealing with one end of the equation. And to be able to enlighten them as to what needs to happen on the other end, and sure, all of us will agree to a tax cap, but not given how things are done currently. That part's got to change. And so as we discuss this, that's the challenge for us, is how are we going to be able to, I hate to say convince people, but at least educate people on why it is that we have to do something on this issue. And again, Peter, thanks. And you know, I look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Brian. I got Frank, Jim, and Mike.
Thanks, Martha. I want to reserve an opportunity to come back and ask some more questions, but I want to direct my one directly to Peter. Peter, there was a committee that dealt with this issue, and I've forgotten who was on it, but can you say, or can some of the committee members chime in on what the discussion was pertaining to this resolution? And did it pass? Does it come here with the recommendation of the committee? And can you give us some flavor as to what the discussion was? Because that may lead us to some more questions.
Briefly, Peter?
Sure. Very briefly, I'll try to. The discussion mostly revolved around the fact that some people, well, we never had five members. Actually, there were five members on the committee, and Nathan was never able to make either meeting. So it were four of us. It was myself and Pat and Jim and Brian. And the first discussion revolved around the question of did it make sense to have an independent resolution from a small county when the NYSAC was all going to support another resolution. Did that make any sense? And the other was the conjecture that, okay, well, maybe it wouldn't make any sense, but what harm would it do? And then the conjecture was that the harm that it would do is it would undercut the position of NYSAC at the bargaining table, because when the NYSAC people were asking for a substantial cut, someone would say, well, here's a resolution from Tompkins County that says all we have to do is freeze it. So we think we'll freeze it instead of giving you a substantial cut. I mean, I'm making it up. But that's mostly what got heard.
And then the question was, was it possible for the two to exist? That is, people were willing to send both of them to the, well, that's not true either, but was it possible for these two motions to be passed without damaging each other? That's what the discussion was about. In the end, the committee voted by 3-1, I believe, to send both of them to you.
Jim.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who was the one? Was it me?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
I don't want to reveal anything.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It was a public meeting. One of the... I have sympathy for what's trying to get done. I was one of the people, I think, on the committee and others that basically wanted to support the NYSAC position. My sense of negotiation with the state legislature is that you don't say what your position is with these guys, because if that's the starting point, pretty much. If you can even get in the room with anyone who can talk about these things and has the power to deal with them, I think you almost have to develop your position in that room and do business the way they do down there. One of the problems that I have with what I heard today is I'm not in love with all the mandates. I think there are mandates that we have to deal with, pension costs, mandates that have to do with PERB and all the things that have come out of the Taylor Law, which not has been looked at, and which has not been looked at since the first day it was implemented. Those are mandates that people don't want to talk about, especially legislators from New York State, because when you start going up against the labor unions, you have yourself a real problem if you're trying to get reelected to the organization. So, you know, I think there are a bunch of things that have to go on at the same time. A tax cap would be nice, but along with that, you know, everyone would feel good about it, but along with that, how would it handcuff not only this county, but other counties who are not actually in as good shape as we are financially, and without the ability to override the tax cap, and I haven't heard that discussion yet, you know, it would make it very difficult. And I agree with Peter. I think the state, it's a wonderful idea at the New York State level. If I were running for governor, I would be saying the same thing. You know, yeah, we all need a tax cap out there because, you know, you're just overspending and that all the taxpayers are unhappy, and I'm going to do whatever I can do to make that happen. And it's disingenuous because no one has talked about what you really have to do in local government and, you know, those of us who are down here and in other towns and cities, the kinds of things that we have to, because those people, and you know, I'm sorry to say, they don't face up to those people on a daily basis, and they don't feel the impact like most of us do. And the interesting thing for me during the discussion about the youth programs is the emails that I've been getting, and I'm sure all of you, some people are very angry, and they're saying, you know, if we talk about pension costs, then why don't we send it out to the private sector and let them take care of our public? Well, hello, that's where it was. It was in the stock market of the United States, and the pension, you know, everything happened in 2008. They lost all their money, and now they have to make it up because they have, you know, they have an obligation because of the state constitution to do that. So it's a really, like, octopus kind of discussion that goes on, and many tentacles, and it cannot be simplified into a resolution that says, you know, I'm going to support this. Or my sense of all this is I want to support what NYSAC is doing. There are 62 counties in the state, and I have confidence that we're able to tell our position as well as any county in New York State, and they will listen to us. But, you know, at this point, that's the resolution I want to support.
Thank you, Jim. I have Mike, then Leslie, then Pam. And I'm going to put myself after Pam.
Well, the school tax bills are just out. Been out for a month in my district, and Ithaca City School District ones just came out. And people are groaning under the total tax burden of the county, the villages, the city, and the school districts, not to mention income taxes. The idea of a tax cap is pretty intriguing to most people who are desperate for help here. Look at the foreclosure list that we got tonight of unpaid taxes that David Squires told us about. Brian, you're right. It's something that it attracts people. They don't understand it. They don't understand what it would do to us. I would hope they would call some of their friends and relatives who may have lived in California during the early times of Proposition 13 out there, which capped municipal taxes, and what it did to their schools, for example. But, Peter, I really want to thank you for this resolution because you're thinking about it. You're trying to say, how can we talk to the state legislature and make them understand that we understand that they've got problems, but they just can't shift the burden totally to us. And I think that this resolution does that, and I want to thank you for that. And I thought you gave a great explanation of it. Will it work? Will they listen to us? I don't know. We've got three state senators from Tompkins County, and the speed with which the tax cap resolution went through the state Senate was unbelievable. Did any of them pick up the phone and call mayors and county legislatures, the chair of our legislature, or anybody and say, what do you folks think about this kind of action? What would it do to you if this happened at the state level? Of course not. It was simply an easy move which won't cost the state anything, and they can go to the voters at this poll time and say, see what we're doing for you? What they're really doing is doing it to you. I'm sorry that we're having to look at this way. I know the NYSAC resolution is a good one, too, but as Peter said, it's the best, but probably not doable either. So I'm going to support this resolution. I hope we all do, because it's an important resolution. It's an important way of attacking this, and it's saying something to our legislators. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. I've got Leslie and then Pam, me, Dooley, and Carol.
Peter, I too want to share my thanks for your thinking behind this resolution. Your explanation was a little long-winded, but I got it, so thank you. I was a little confused, only because at our last meeting when this was sent, or whatever the meeting was, the ad hoc committee was put together. It was to look at a resolution you had brought and tweak it, improve it, whatever else, and bring something back to us. So I was a little confused in why there were two resolutions coming to the committee if we had sent one back. I wasn't sure I understood what was going on and having to make a decision on two resolutions. So I don't need an explanation. I just wanted to voice how confusing that was for me, because I thought there was a committee doing this based on one resolution that we sent back. So at some point I'll get an explanation on that. I do agree, and I do have to agree, that the state will do what the state wants to do. They've been, Mike, doing it to us for years, and will continue to do it to us for years. And so I see the position that you're presenting, although, like you said, not the best, as a place where it seems very attractive. If I were at the state level, I probably would be thinking, oh, look, this here's something that seems almost like a compromise. I don't like that we pay damn near $30 million in mandates, if not more. I thought it was a little bit more than that. I don't necessarily want to say leave it at that. If I think of the Medicaid cap, didn't quite feel like much of a cap as the years continued. And so I can't imagine what would happen if we were to say, freeze, don't anymore, we're not paying any more for mandates beyond where we are right now. You know, there's always, the government seems to be wiser sometimes in figuring out all the ways to make us pay for stuff. And it's one of the things that, you know, I hope will
tread cautiously around, but I just really wanted to say thanks for your thinking around this and the work and time that you and the rest of the committee put in on it, and I will support this resolution.
Thank you, Leslie. Pam?
I really appreciate you putting in the time too, Peter. I think it's wonderful that the committee actually tried to grapple with this in a kind of serious, rational way. And I think that's the key here, is that the assumption is that this is a rational process that we're dealing with the state. And I think that is a mistake. I think that the reason the state is imposing this tax cap is because they have to come up with something that looks like they're showing some physical restraint. And, of course, this cap provides no physical restraint on the part of the state legislature at all or the governor. It puts it all on the county. And I think it is a total sham. And I mean, I will say that I have spent a lot of time recently out talking to people, going door to door. And one of the things when I talked to them about this and talked to them about the fact that, you know, in Tompkins County we figured out that 88% of our property tax revenue goes to pay for state unfunded mandates, people's breath is taken away. I mean, they are shocked at that. And then I talk about the fact that it should be illegal, that they should not be allowed to do that, to take over our revenue sources, and to say nothing of the fact that it's a much more regressive way of collecting tax than is the income tax. So I think that the only way that we are going to get the state to change its ways is by pressure, is by public pressure, is by educating the public about this issue and just standing as firmly and strongly together as all of the counties together on this issue, because I don't think it's a rational discussion. I think the fact that we would think that they would agree that after this year that they would not increase our unfunded mandates, I think is wishful thinking. And I think we need to take the toughest stand that we can. And in this case, I think it's the NYSEC resolution. So I won't be able to support this either, even though I appreciate this hard work.
Thank you, Pam. I will agree with Pam on this. Again, I appreciate your work and your passion and your research, Peter. But actually, the two are actually incompatible. Yours says there should be a freeze, and the NYSEC resolution says that there should not be a cap unless it's coupled with significant cuts in local costs for state-mandated programs that cause local property tax increases. Those are not compatible. And the problem is, well, we sitting here got by. I don't think our citizens have gotten by, you know, and I'll wave the foreclosure list again. I know that other counties aren't getting by with the status quo. The status quo is not acceptable, and we should oppose freezing it, because there are counties whose entire property tax levy is not enough to cover their Medicaid costs, and that does not include their mandates for early intervention, preschool, special education, public assistance, child welfare, youth detention, probation, indigent defense, and pensions. So the status quo is actually mind-boggling for many counties. We are fortunate because we are relatively well-to-do, so we have reasonable other income. And also, we have probably fewer residents on Medicaid and other mandates than other counties. So, with regret, I really can't support this. In terms of the timing, I will say that the NYSEC resolution, we didn't have it in hand when the ad hoc committee got started. So that's why we ended up with two resolutions. I will also point out that the Medicaid cap is a cap just on the growth. That the growth should be no more than 3%. So even our gubernatorial candidates in their, well, at least in Andrew Cuomo's literature, he talks about the Medicaid cap as if that's been taken care of. So just as a public information, that's only on the growth. And as far as the stand of our own state senators. The day before this was voted on, I had a phone conversation with Jim Seward. And first it was about the gas drilling moratorium, and I'm happy to say he voted with us on that. But I said then, I understand, Jim, that this tax cap proposal is coming to you, and it was out of the blue. And I said, this is untenable. There's nothing about mandate relief. He said, oh, yes, I know. It's unworkable without mandate relief. And then he went and voted for it. So I feel really that this is very unfortunate. And I'll just point out, the whole summer, the budget is supposed to be passed April 1st by Albany, and the whole summer it was later and later, and people were saying how dysfunctional they were. The minute they passed, the Senate passed the final resolution on the budget, they passed this property tax cap so they could change the subject. So they could turn and say, the reason your taxes are high, New Yorkers, is those undisciplined local governments. Totally took the eye off the ball of how dysfunctional they were. I'll put you in the list, Peter. So this is a major effort that we have to a major stand we have to take. I think what's in here, Peter, in your resolution, is a good basis of a memo that we might float to NYSAC as sort of a briefing memo. Let's work out a strategy on how we negotiate. I don't think these ideas should be lost. It's if we have to go there, I think that's a reasonable thing to do. But I don't think it works to pass both of these, and I hope we'll vote on the NYSAC resolution instead. Thank you for listening. I've got Dooley, then Carol, Peter, and Pat.
Well, Pam and Martha said a lot of what I was going to say, but Peter, I took your approach of trying to put myself in state legislator's position and how would I react to what you're suggesting. And I would have no impetus to accept the idea of freezing mandates at a particular dollar amount. So that test didn't work for me. Since I am a proponent, one of the proponents of restoring a progressive income tax with a lot of brackets, I've never said, and I don't think it would, cover the deficits that New York State is facing. What I've been disappointed in, among other things, is that the state legislature and the governor seem to have paid zero attention to Richard Ravitch's carefully thought-out approach. They're scared to death of borrowing anymore, but when things get so bad, the state doesn't have a lot of choices, and I think his plan for the state makes a lot of sense. So I would rather commend that to some of our state legislators. I will be supporting the NYSAC resolution for the reasons that Pam and Martha have already enunciated, and Jim have enunciated.
Carol.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure where to go at this point, I should wait. But I'll say, I also want to thank Peter and the committee for doing something here. I believe that in order to put pressure on the state in any negotiation with a powerful entity, as Peter put it, the only way to succeed is to have many voices saying the same thing. So in that tradition, I was pleased to see that this resolution that came to us incorporated the NYSAC resolution in its first resolved, because I saw that had been added since the first time this had come to us, which I think is a good way to go. And we also know that in Tompkins County, we often take things to the next step or two. So I thought that this was a nice solution that both supported the NYSAC attempt, but that didn't amend the NYSAC resolution so that many voices could be saying something in unison. So I would be in favor of us passing something that both incorporates the NYSAC resolution, which I think this does, and I do think that if we're going to have something in our resolved, that we need to have the actual NYSAC resolution added or appended. And I thought that was going to happen. So I'm a little bit confused about that. I'd like an answer to the question of if that first resolved continues to have the NYSAC resolution, do we then add it? Do we append it? Is that
I think we can send
question?
It, we can send
point
it along
information.
As the second. Kathy, we usually sometimes do that, don't we? We might say attached.
Is that a friendly
suggestion? Yeah, that's very friendly.
Okay.
I mean, it was meant to imply that, but there's easy ways of doing it. See Appendix A, and that becomes Appendix A or something.
So
like that.
I would be happy with that. But then I also realized that as I thought about this, I'm uncomfortable with weighing in on either the NYSAC resolution, although I would do that to be one of many voices, or on this one, weighing in on a tax cap without making the connection between the property tax and the income tax. And so I did attempt to craft something that I was going to offer as an amendment to Peter's resolution. I don't think it makes sense to add it to the NYSAC resolution, but to Peter's resolution and the committee's resolution that would make the connection between the property tax levy and the income tax rates, particularly the top marginal rates. As we recognize here in Tompkins County that we have to deal with this budget crisis from both an expenditure side and a revenue side. And in the same vein, I just don't think it makes sense to be asking the state to act on a cap which caps caps one side without the other, or weighing in on the way those two intersect with each other. So I wrote something and distributed it, and then there are two things on your desk that say proposed by Carol Chuck. One of them, the one that had the edits, was somebody. Martha suggested these edits, and so I would like to suggest an amendment so that we get it into the record, whether we vote the original resolution up or down. I still would like to get this into the record and offer the amendment, but I will wait to do so if the chair thinks I should.
No, if you want to move that as an amendment.
Okay, so what I would like to move, if you look at the edited version of what was on your desk that says proposed amendment to resolution number 148 that has the underlines, but there's one word in there in the edits that I was not happy with, so I will read it once people have a chance to find it.
And the edits are mine, so
yeah. So what I'm going to propose that we add a whereas that is at line 27. It's sort of in between the final two whereases.
Excuse me, from point of order or whatever information or something, you seem to be mixing up the two resolutions. But mine doesn't have any line numbers on it, so it doesn't.
It did in your packet.
Oh, it does. Okay. I see in the packet. Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry. That confused me.
Okay. So I had already offered one suggestion that we add the NYSAC resolution, and that was considered friendly. So now I'm offering a proposed amendment that would read, and it adds a whereas and it adds a resolved. The whereas would be, whereas New York State's trend of shifting its expenses to the property tax levy has been, and I still want to use the word affected, not driven, affected by the state's reduction in the top personal income tax rates by more than 50% over the last 25 years. So I would like to recognize in our whereas is that there's a relationship here, and I want to add a resolve that would be, well, it now would be after the third resolved, sort of after line 46 there.
Hold on. So the lines are going to change because Peter's added.
Yeah, his would be at the very end. Okay. His would be at the very end. So mine would still be, it would be become the one to the third resolved. And it would be resolved further that the Tompkins County Legislature respectfully requests that the New York State Governor and Legislature shift the burden from reliance on the regressive property tax and towards restoration of a more progressive income tax on New York's top marginal brackets. So, and I so move.
Is there a second for those for that amendment?
I mean, I'll second it.
Well, if you'll accept it, then.
What?
Is that accepted as friendly?
No, I can't accept it. I want to talk about it. It's hard to.
Got it.
It's hard to, in parliamentary way, to.
Okay, well, duly seconded. Okay, so the amendment's on the floor. Mike?
Carol, I understand your amendment. Is it your intention to vote for this resolution if that's amended that way?
Yes.
Okay. So, Peter and Pat had been after you, Carol. So I'll go to Peter and Pat, and if you want to talk about the amendment, that's really what should be discussed
on the floor. An amendment.
Well, I just maybe if I could be indulged to have a little back and forth discussion before I either decide to accept it or if that's okay.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm a Roberts purist, so I'm not used to these friendly amendments, and they make me a little bit nervous. But
relax, it's okay. It's friendly.
Okay. I don't have.
Excuse me. Whether you're a purist or not, use the microphone.
Oh, sorry. I have no objection to the whereas. The reason I didn't incorporate it, when I asked permission to put another whereas in there, which I thought adopted what you were trying to say, is when I read this, I spent about half an hour today trying to figure out what could one put it in or not. So I just want to tell you what my thinking was. Let me read it again very, very quickly. Where is it? Yeah, that's okay with me, okay? I don't have any problem with that. The thing that I do have a problem with is the resolved, and because a lot of this discussion, both my discussion and the discussion of people who spoke against my resolution, all had to do with what's the best way of dealing with negotiating with a partner who's infinitely stronger than you are. And a lot of discussion has revolved around that, and people have different viewpoints. The reason why I didn't just put this in was I thought to myself, that's a bad way to deal with people who are stronger than you, that getting away from what is your fundamental need at the moment, which is a cap on that, to tell them how to run their business that has nothing to do with nothing to do with that particular issue. Is it clear what I'm saying? If I was one of these big shots, I've never been a big shot, so I don't quite know how to do it, but I've seen it in movies. I would say, who the hell are they to tell me how to run my business? And that's how I saw that. Now, you know, I have nothing against this except that particular view of how you negotiate with strong people. I have negotiated with strong people like presidents of Cornell and something, and I'd never put something like that in there, telling them how to do something else that they're doing other than what it is that I'm trying to do when I know that they're against that in the first place. So that's my thinking. I would be willing to put it in, but you might just think about that for a second as to whether you think that the resolved is really necessary, given the whereas.
But it's Pat's turn, so you can think about it.
I raised my hand to speak to the original resolution, so I'd like to reserve my time to do that. I will say I'm fine with both the whereas and the resolve, and if Peter should decide to do so, to accept it as it is, I would be happy to accept it as the seconder.
Well, it's on the floor, so it's...
Carol, can you make a decision real fast?
No, it's been moved and seconded.
Oh.
I'd like to move on.
All right.
Jim?
The resolve about increasing the New York's top marginal brackets, I will not support it when that ends, because I think if anybody remembers what happened in 2008, a huge amount of money, revenue that comes from New York State came from Wall Street. And when that went away, that's why we have a revenue loss in New York State. So my sense is that we leave the income tax part of it alone and just deal with the resolution we have. So I will not support it. That's it.
Okay, Carolyn and Brian.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything that I need to make a decision about. I'm offering an amendment, and it's up to the mover and the seconder to decide whether it's friendly, and I don't have any problems with us addressing it as a separate amendment, because I think there are people who might feel one way or the other about the amendment versus the resolution.
So
but
where are we
I
at?
Can't, but I personally don't know if I'm going to be able to support the full resolution unless we tie.
All right, I'll accept it.
Tax. So
I can't. All right.
You can say you're going to vote for it. So let's.
Do we allow visitors to speak?
All right, Peter, you're out of order, I'm afraid.
So,
okay.
So, I mean, that's just how I feel. I like the idea of speaking in unison with NYSAC by including their resolution. I was uncomfortable with weighing in with something else until I had the idea that this was the part of it I was uncomfortable with, and I can support it if we include a tie between the two, and I'll decide later on hearing more discussion whether I can support it without it.
Okay, Brian, Nathan, me, and Jim.
Thanks.
Excuse me,
but
I still in there someplace,
right? Well, we're still on the amendment. Okay.
Okay, we're on the amendment, right?
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, and this is, I thought we were doing God's work here for a while.
Point of order, go ahead.
If the movement of the main resolution is willing to accept that change, all the person who asked for the change has to do is withdraw the amendment.
Peter and Pat, are you willing to accept it?
Yeah,
yes.
I'm willing to accept it.
So I'm withdrawing it as an amendment.
So it's okay.
Do I understand correctly that I need to withdraw this? Or my understanding is you introduce a suggestion and either they accept it as friendly or not.
Well, I think...
You just did.
Jonathan, there's no reason they can't just accept it now.
Well, I mean, my view is that she made a motion, it was seconded, people discussed it. It seems like the point of accepting it as friendly, as far as I'm concerned, is passed. And people should address that and then vote on whether to add it or not. But, you know, you've already had three or four comments on adding whether this motion should be accepted or not, and it seems too late for them to accept it as friendly.
All right, let's just move quickly, if we can, through the rest of the comments. I've got Brian.
Okay, this is just on the amendment. and this is, I guess this is exactly what I was hoping wasn't going to happen when we were discussing this, and that is, you know, we have a topic, we have an issue and a task to perform on that, you know, one way or the other. We're here to identify a problem and to ask for a result from someone, from Albany. I'm totally in agreement. We don't ask for a result and then tell them how to do it. And, you know, this is very much, to me, mixing apples and oranges. You've got two very separate and distinct issues that we're trying to
to put together like this that I certainly can't support. I can listen to it, but I can't support it as an amendment to this resolution. And as long as I'm on the subject, I will support the NYSEC resolution when it does come, because that has definite ends to it. It tells them in no uncertain terms, here's what we want. Thank you.
Thank you. Nathan?
So we're still talking about the amendment? Is that
yes.
What's happening? All right. I actually want to be on the actual resolution list.
So nothing on the amendment?
Yeah, unless I can call the question.
No, according to Peter, you've already made a comment, so no, you can't call the question at this moment.
Too bad.
So I'll get Pat and then Nathan when we get to the main amendment. Jim?
I've already made my comment. I won't support it.
Okay, my comment is that I think we can tell the state about what our position is on this. We all pay both income and property taxes, so I think it is our business. I think this improves Peter's resolution, so I would vote for the amendment, but I'm afraid then I would still vote against the resolution. So, all right, Dave.
I haven't made any comments. Can I call the question?
Yes.
Then
all
I
right.
do.
The motion on the floor is the amendment that includes the whereas and the resolved as Carol has read them. All in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand.
Don't we have to vote to call the question?
To call the question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's right. I didn't have any lunch or dinner. So, all right, all in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? 1. Okay, the question is called. All those in favor of the amendment, as Carol has read it, and where is the result? Please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That fails. So we are back to the main motion. Resolution on linking the mandate cap. Peter's resolution. Pat and then Nathan. And Frank? You're on the list, Frank? Pat?
Frank. No, Pat is first.
Yep, Pat.
I call the question.
All right. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The question is called. All right. All those in favor of the resolution, as Peter has proposed and one amendment on it about the addition, please raise your hand, please. All those in favor of the main motion. 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed to the main motion. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That fails 4-9. Okay, Peter, you have a second motion.
Second motion. I move it. Okay.
Read the title, please.
If I can find it. Urging New York State to significantly cut the unfunded mandates that cause local property tax increases before imposing a cap on local property taxes.
Is there a second? Less than seconds. Discussion. Frank.
Martin, can you say when the NYSEC resolution will be presented, if you know the timing, and if there have already been counties that have weighed in on it, if you know that?
There's a press release. Is it yesterday? It was tracking the tax. The press release was within the last week. The Medicaid Commission report came out, and then the press release with the property tax cap resolution came out. Was in the last week. The resolution itself was voted on at the NYSEC conference earlier in September. Was that all your question?
Do you have any idea how many counties that have supported it already?
No, I don't. I do know of one county that before we even got to the NYSAC conference, they saw the resolution in the packet that went out ahead of time, and I think it was Westchester County that voted even before the conference to support the resolution. I guess I haven't caught up on my counties in the news. I don't know if others have already voted on it.
I didn't see it, and I tried to check those counties.
You're not talking on the microphone, Frank.
Sorry, I didn't see it in. Kathy has been keeping us informed of those, and I didn't see it in there, and I checked them before we came down.
So I don't know if we're first, but maybe we'll be first.
I thought sitting back here would change my perspective. No. That's why I sat back.
They're waiting for Tompkins County, Frank.
Is that it, Jim? Anything else?
That's it. No.
Pam?
Well, I just would like to suggest that we encourage NYSAC. I mean, I think there should be a PR campaign on this property tax cap. I think that the county leaders, all the county legislature leaders, and I mean, NYSAC should really put forward, get the word out there, because we do need to educate the public about what this means to local government. And this is really an important issue. I would be willing to have the county chip in a little money to have, you know, to try and do some kind of campaign, because they're beating up on us here, and we need to fight back.
Thank you, Pam. Leslin, then Dooley.
I just want to go back on something you said earlier, Martha, about the previous resolution. I'm willing to support this resolution as it is standing now, and hope that we can use the language and the work done by the ad hoc committee to send a memo to the NYSAC group as well, saying here is some of our thinking if this does not go anywhere. And so I'd appreciate us thinking in that line.
Thank you, Leslin. I can work with Peter on a letter to Steve Aquario that puts these, you know, in a memo form. I can talk to you after. I mean, I think presenting a resolution that didn't pass might not be the strongest way to go, but we can write up a letter that has these ideas. I will tell you that Peter and I both attended the Taxation and Finance Committee meeting at NYSAC, and there are a number of changes in improvements, we believe, in this NYSAC resolution that had Tompkins County stamp on it. So definitely there was input from both of us. Did I have some? Dooley, did you have your hand up?
I did. I've been wrestling with how best to share information with constituents on this subject, and I got a column into the Village of Lansing newsletter, which was published on Monday. It's 2 pages long, about, and I'd be happy to share that with you for your use in writing NYSAC. I'd be happy to give copies to my colleagues so you can see what a radical or not I am.
Thank you, Julie. Jim?
Martha, when after you meet with Peter and whoever, would you just distribute it to everyone so that they could take a look at what you're doing? Thank you.
And I will call Steve Curry tomorrow. Anything else? All, ready to vote. All in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Opposed? 1 opposed. 14-1. That passes. That concludes our
13-1.
Thank you very much. All right. That concludes our public business. We need a motion to go into executive session. Pam moves. Peter seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
As I said before, for real estate negotiations and personnel matters. All in favor of going to executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you. Let's take a five-minute break, come back at 8:15. I expect we will not take any action after the executive session.